Welcome to the Michelle Meow Show, your A through Z covering the LGBT, LMNOP, and everyone in between. Thank you so much for joining us here on this beautiful, beautiful Thursday afternoon. Woke up this morning, heard the birds, the garbage trucks, and I was okay with it just because it is so incredibly beautiful in San Francisco. And we're here at the Commonwealth Club with my co-host, John Zipper.
Hey, Michelle. Welcome again.
Yeah, it's always good to be. It's the best day of the week. It's Little Friday. And so Little Friday is when you start pre-partying a little bit and you just, you know, you're going to ride into the weekend like it's no big deal. This weekend is a big deal because of our guest who's here with us. Since we started promoting this kind of awesome opportunity to have him here with us in this private conversation, there were people who were sending me messages like, oh my gosh, he's so incredible. I already got my ticket, so I don't need to go to your show. So it's kind of like, all right, well, I guess it's the point of it all is that we want to let you know, be at Feinstein's at the Nico. Let's welcome singer-songwriter Matt Alber. Matt, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no, we're super excited. I was telling you right before we got started, there was a woman who sent me a message and said, I'm coming only because of what he looks like.
Did you say it was a woman?
Yeah, I did.
That's very rare.
I wasn't going to out you as a gay man. I, you know, not that you're not out, until she got here. So we'll wait for her to get here. I'm sure she's going to show up, and then I'll come back and I'll let her know. By the way, incredible singer-songwriter, gay Matt Albert.
That's totally. I mean, admiration is admiration.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's tradition here on the program. We start by sharing a coming out story, and it's really however you embrace it. So it doesn't have to be the official story. It's just whichever coming out story you want to share.
Does it have to be my coming out story? Just kidding.
It could be the story you would tell this woman if she comes up to you.
Okay. Oh my gosh, coming out. Golly, I'm 44 now. That feels like ages and ages and ages ago.
That's good.
Yeah, it was. That's funny. When I'm picturing coming out, all I can think of is my high school choir director's office, which is where I came out to my dad. And she was an awesome lady. Her name was Jean Houck. She was kind of one of those choir directors that maybe had been doing it for 10 more years than she should have. But I just kind of remember her as being like this kind of crusty old lesbian who would take smoke breaks during choir. We were like, where is she going? And she comes back smelling like cigarettes. But, you know, that she definitely saw that I was going through something, you know, and like a good teacher, she had her finger on the pulse of what was going on, you know, in her choir room. And, you know, I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, in a pretty conservative community. There was no Gay Straight Alliance at my school. There was no one I could tell that I was gay. I knew I was gay, you know, ever since I can remember anything. You know, I had a big crush on my babysitter when I was a kid. I didn't know why I liked him so much. We also went to a pretty conservative church. We went to a brand of church called Assembly of God, which is quite dramatic and exciting. If you go to one of their services, you'll see lots of hands in the air and jumping up and down and languages you don't understand. And, that's kind of like where I grew up. I didn't feel like I was normal for sure. I knew I sort of bought that whole, what they were teaching me at that church, hook, line, and sinker. And so I did the whole trying to pray my gay away thing pretty hardcore for about 4 years. Wow. And now I know that I got an answer to all my prayers because I did not magically turn into a straight person. I blossomed into this 44-year-old gay man, and I'm so happy that those prayers were answered in that way, I think.
And did you lose your faith along the way, or did you manage to work the two together?
You know, I lost that faith.
Yeah.
That faith didn't work for me. It led me to pretty, pretty bad places. I was definitely suicidal as a teenager, and, you know, if you hear those kind of messages that, you know, who you are inherently at your core is something that's wrong, you know, of course that's going to lead you to some bad places. I'm lucky that I made it out, and I'm lucky that I think something inside me said, hey, no, that's wrong. You need to find better answers. So I did, and I'm really happy I did. I'm really happy I stuck around, because I would have missed all this.
We are too. At what point did music become, you know, part of your life? Was music, or were you involved in it? Or, yeah, did you, I'm trying to find my voice again. it's on this side.
For people listening, she's trying to find the microphone that is literally on her head.
Yeah, I'm used to it on this side, so I think, like, yes. You know, I'm just like, yeah. All right, so yeah, because, you know, music's so healing, and so for a lot of people, if you're going through something super extreme, you're writing or you're expressing yourself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thank BMG from the bottom of my heart, because when I was a kid, I joined the BMG Music Club, and they send you 15 free CDs. And when you're a kid that doesn't have any money, that's really important. So I had, I had Def Leppard and Aerosmith and Elton John and Madonna as my friends that I could rock out to when I was feeling like I was going crazy.
I want to go back to your choir teacher, because you said that room was also where you told your dad?
Yes.
How did this come about?
Well, everything kind of came to a head in my high school years. I was a senior in high school. And she could tell I was going through something crazy. She was like, I'm calling your dad. He's coming to school, and you're going to sit and talk to him. I think she probably knew what was going on. And I'll never forget it. I had my eyes closed, and I was shaking, and I was sure if I told him the truth about me that, you know, the world would end and the sky would come down. And I remember I just opened my eyes, and I told him, I said, Dad, I'm gay. And it took me forever to open my eyes. And I opened my eyes, and he was just crying. And he just hugged me, you know. And I can't say that it was a super smooth road all the way through from there. Like, we've definitely had a journey, you know, because it took him a long time to kind of understand me. But I'm really grateful that's what I got as a response. I wasn't as lucky on the mom side of things. It took her much longer to kind of figure things out. You know, I'll tell you that story some other time.
Coming out in music, and, you know, reading some of the articles and getting to know Matt on the internet, there are a lot of articles that are like, you know, out gay musician, songwriter, Matt Elber. And of course, you know, there's a part of like being an LGBTQ artist where people kind of hitched on to being one of the first or being known as an LGBTQ artist. I'd love to hear how that came about, how you felt, you know, being known as a gay artist versus an artist.
Well, I've always been gay, and that's all I know. So being called a gay singer songwriter just feels supernatural, and not supernatural. Maybe it is supernatural. Who knows? That's just always been who I am. So I've never had a problem with being called that.
But was there a time before you became known as publicly gay that people would make the assumption that you're straight, such as, I don't know, this woman who contacted Michelle?
No, I've never been in the closet as a musician. Okay. So just from the very get-go, if you listen to any of my songs, it's pretty clear right from the get-go, I'm talking about boys a lot.
Yeah.
Either you're gay or you're a priest or both.
People have asked me that, oh, aren't you worried about boxing yourself in or something, or closing yourself off to a whole community? I was like, no, not at all. You know,
well, we've asked this question to others who performers, artists, actors, directors, etc. And it's always kind of have you ever experienced discrimination professionally? Or do you think you've maybe not had opportunities that, in other words, you never were told you didn't get this job because you're gay, but maybe someone just didn't think you were right for it. And so, you know, do you think it's affected you professionally?
It totally has, in the best way. Before I started writing my own stories into my life, I was, I was performing as a classical singer, and then I had a short period of time where I was trying to be a country singer. I wanted to be Tim McGraw really bad. And I went on the reboot of Star Search that lasted about 5 seconds and promptly lost. And thank God I lost, because then I started just writing in my own voice.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, it has profoundly impacted my life to be just honest and open about who I am, because I just have been embraced from the get-go.
That's great.
Country. You know, it's interesting. As I told you, I've been listening to your music for about a week now. We got word that you're going to be here with us before your performances this weekend, which, by the way, Friday is sold out?
I think Friday sold out.
Wow. Yeah. Congrats. But
Saturday.
That's awesome.
We sell tickets for Saturday.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we'll let people know. You got to get your tickets before Saturday is sold out. But there's this grit in your voice that I love, but then it's like, it's not like this grit where it's just like, yeah, I'm angry and I'm feeling your music. It's like this grit, and it's so romantic.
Oh. Yes.
You as you were saying, you write, you know, a lot of songs, you know, being out, talking about guys, talking about love. And one article I read, you like to perform to gay guys who are in love.
I totally do. I mean, it's pretty sweet. You look out and there's like heads on shoulders, and sometimes it's two heads on one shoulder. Like, you know, I don't care how many are in your group of love. I'm just happy to see it.
You said after the flirtation with country, you found your own voice and wrote songs. Describe in your own words, what is your voice in your music?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think your own voice is just when you stop trying to sound like anyone else, which is kind of a tough thing to do as a singer. I kind of grew up as a chameleon singer, you know, where I was really good at sounding like everybody else.
Yeah.
And when I finally put that down, I was like, well, what happens if I just sing? And it's a pretty scary thing to do, but really rewarding.
We've certainly found success at it. Is it easier to do than?
Maybe it's a lifelong process.
Yeah.
I think so. When I first started writing songs, I really wanted to be Tim McGraw or Rufus Wainwright, because I love Rufus Wainwright and mm-hmm. the way he writes. And mm-hmm. I really admire him as a songwriter. So I think when I go back and listen to early days, I was like, oh, that kid was listening to a lot of Rufus Wainwright. But that's all right. You know, you change and evolve over time.
Well, welcome back to San Francisco. San Francisco is a special place, I think, for you. Oh, yeah. It kind of brings you back to the beginning.
Oh, yeah. I got out of Missouri and moved straight here when I was right out of college. And I'll never forget that first day of work for Chanticleer, where I got my bus schedule out and I was like, oh, I'm going to take public transportation and I'm going to figure out my route. And I went and stood on the corner up by the Pacific Medical Center. And I was like, it was a Scott and Waller. That's where it was. And I took the bus from Scott and Waller four blocks and got off and promptly walked. I was like, okay, I got to walk the whole way. But beyond my public transport dumb stories, San Francisco was the first place I felt normal. And walking around the city and seeing people like me and seeing that it was okay to just be yourself out in the world was... I'll always be grateful to San Francisco for that.
Well, I don't know if you want to go into more about your Chanticleer years. What was that like?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it was, you know, Chanticleer is a classical a cappella men's group, which is super weird. It's not very many of those around. But it was kind of like my grad school. So I got to sing with, you know, 11 other guys. We wore tuxedos and held very classical music folders and toured around everywhere between, you know, tiny little concert halls and the sticks of America to the best ones in Tokyo and everything in between. And it was an amazing experience. My favorite part of Chanticleer was when we got to go work with students, because we spent about, you know, a good third of our year meeting with young people in classrooms, which is where I first saw Chanticleer. They came to my college and did a concert, and you know, they got up with, you know, sleepy-eyed and did a concert for us at, you know, 11 a.m., which was, now I realize, is very early for any concert giver. But I sang with Chanticleer here for 5 years. We made 7 records together. 2 of them won Grammy Awards. But the best thing I took away from it was, 11 friendships that I carry with me today.
And why did you leave?
Something in here was like, okay, I could stay in Chanticleer for a long time. It's kind of like the Supreme Court in some ways. Like, once you're in, you could probably stay.
Yeah.
But something told me I should probably start writing what's going on in my life. And so in my apartment that in the Castro, it overlooked the Beck's Motor Lodge across the street from on Market Street, which did not look near as nice back then. but my, I remember I'd sit there with my guitar and I'd be writing and looking out the window and I'd see all kind of activity across the way. And I was like, I need to shut my curtains. This is distracting.
I'm giggling because I'm imagining your place is probably a lot taller now with a sky, you know, and I mean, it's probably a condo now.
You know
what? The Castro has changed.
I just walked by the place and I just looked at my window. They haven't torn it down. It's the same building.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Speaking of leaving Chanticleer, San Francisco, and bring up, you know, this is, it's almost like coming home to you in a way. I mean, it's really, you started writing, you were alluding to what was going on with you, and it kind of was the beginning of your solo career, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I did my very first concert at a store that is now moved to Hayes Valley, but it's called the Nancy Boy Store, which is a beautiful store. And if you've never been to Nancy Boy, go in, because they sell the most beautifully smelling bath salts and soaps, and they even sell furniture, and you don't want to leave that store. Well, my friend Eric, I used to go and sit on they had this light blue, powder blue couch, and Eric owned the store, and he was kind of my psychologist, and I would say, Eric, he dumped me, you know, and I would cry on the couch, or Eric, I dumped him, and he told me, he was like, look, you just made your first record. I'm going to clear all the furniture out of here, and we're going to use this as your first concert space. So it's now the Kenneth Wingard store. But it used to be called the Nancy Boy Store, and that's where I got my first concert.
And what was it like that first time with people just there for you?
Oh, it was super scary and incredibly exciting. I'll never forget that night. My dad even came. We had spent a couple of years not speaking. I told you it was kind of a rough road.
Yeah.
That night was the first time I'd seen my dad in a couple of years and talked to him. And I remember he got off the F Market streetcar and hugged me. And that was the beginning of the rest of our relationship. You know, it was a super amazing night. I later learned that Sylvester had once performed in that room.
Wow.
Because it used to be a club, I think. So I was like, my first stage was Sylvester.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. So the first song, can we talk about that? Like, you know, what you were going through, what the song is about, or who?
Oh, well, you know, the very first record I made in that apartment on Market Street was called Nonchalant. I made it with my really good friend Jeff, who had a studio in Noe Valley. So I would tootle up to his place and record vocals and then come back to my studio and listen to him. And I remember I'd walk down the streets of Noe Valley with my headphones on. And this place is just such a magical city. You know, it's like there's no better place to write a record than San Francisco. But yeah, I was basically writing about trying to stay in love. You know, I was in my 20s and I hadn't learned a lot about love yet. I just knew that I felt a lot of it and I made a lot of mistakes, unfortunately. But that's what songs are for.
I'm kind of nosy. I mean,
that's why
I have a show, and I kind of want to know, I mean, what those first relationships were kind of like for Matt in San Francisco and and talking about gay love. And I think that there's something to it in which when we start talking about our relationships and our love, people always take stuff out of it that it's like any other love out there, and then there are unique things about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, after living in the closet and, you know, trying to pray my gay away and landing in San Francisco was just like a pop-up book. You know, I was like, oh, my gosh, I can actually live here. So I did. I fell in love hard a few times here. I fell in love with a guy named Jeff, who was I met him at the Sundance Saloon, which is a place where if you want to go see the best gay country western club in the world, go to Sundance Saloon. Like 200 guys show up every week and spin each other around in cowboy boots. And, so he literally swept me off my feet, and I wrote many songs about our relationship. I wrote a song called End of the World about us trying to sort of keep it together. And then I ended up falling in love with my roommate in that apartment across the street from Beck's Motor Lodge. You know so much about me now. I'm so embarrassed. But yeah, I fell in love with my roommate Joe, and we ended up moving to LA together. And so, yeah, I've loved a lot in San Francisco.
I always love also when the gays, the queers share our love stories. There's crossover between the gays and the lesbian stories as well. That was very lesbian of you.
I've been accused. Is this episode brought to you by U-Haul?
Yeah.
That's good. So what was it like the first time you introduced one of your boyfriends to your father or both of your parents?
You know, my folks have been amazing. Yeah, they've been very, very accepting and welcoming. When I came out to my dad, I forgot that I actually had a boyfriend back then. I was very resourceful. Well, there was no smartphones or internet, but I found a way to find love even as a 18-year-old in St. Louis. And I remember I came out to my dad, and then the next day I told him I had a boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
And then the next day I said, and if you have a problem with that, I'll move in with him. And he was like, no. Let's have him over for dinner. And then I realized what a mistake that was. It was the most awkward dinner I think I've ever had. But, you know, kudos to my dad for inviting him over.
I want to talk about this album, the recent one, and kind of where you're at with it. And I'm guessing there's a whole lot of your personal experiences as well. It's kind of been your journey and the way that you write songs.
Well, yeah, the last two records I put out, one was called Wind, Sand, Stars, and that was another sort of singer-songwriter record of my loves and my passions. And then I put out a record just this past year, which is a tribute to Mel Torme, because I am a huge Mel Torme fan.
Did you ever meet him?
I never got to meet him. Oh, but I hear that there's somebody in the audience that's friends with his son, so I might elbow him to introduce him. So I recreated a Mel Torme record called Swinging on the Moon. Mm-hmm. I renamed my version of it How High the Moon, which is my favorite song on the album. And that record benefits an El Sistema music program, which is El Sistema is they exist all over the country, but they basically give free music lessons to kids who would otherwise never get them. And some very famous people have come out of El Sistema. Dudamel, who directs the LA Philharmonic, was an El Sistema kid, just to name one. So if people want to check out what I sound like as a jazz crooner, you can put my name into iTunes or Spotify and look for the picture of me in a blue tuxedo.
Go ahead.
No, I wanted to ask about, you brought up, youth, and throughout your career, your audience has also, I think, evolved with you and grown. I mean, and you've done a lot as far as bringing out the youth, being out, talking about LGBTQ, being an amazing advocate for our community. And you have a project, a documentary, actually, in which you work with LGBTQ youths.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm so glad you asked me about that. We, my good friend John and I in Portland. I moved to Portland, by the way. That's where I live now. And while I was performing in Portland, I met this amazing youth choir called Bridging Voices, and they are a free, unauditioned choir. So if you want to be in Bridging Voices, you just show up. And kids drive from hours around just to be there every Sunday to feel normal. And they're an incredible choir. We did a concert together, and then I said, gosh, wouldn't it be cool if everybody got to meet Bridging Voices and see what it's like to be a queer teenager today? And I thought, well, I probably couldn't introduce everybody, but we could definitely, you know, put some cameras on them. And the idea kind of snowballed really quickly. And after 2 years of working, we have created a free 7-part documentary series called Room to Grow, which everybody can watch even today for free on an app called Reverie. And it's kind of like a gay Netflix, but it's free. So it's R-E-V-R-Y, Reverie. If you go to reverie.tv, or just type in Room to Grow into the internet and gay, it comes right up. So we made a 7-part series following 7 amazing kids and their families. There are trans kids, there's non-binary kids, there's pansexual kids. Everywhere on the spectrum is represented. And if you want to know what it's like to be a queer teenager, you should totally watch Room to Grow. it was an incredible experience making it. We made a film version of it too because we couldn't fit all the kids into the series. The film premiered at Outfest in LA, which is one of the premier LGBT film festivals, and it's about ready to be released to the public.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, how does that feel to see teenagers out at a time when you were that age, think it was so much different? And I mean, are you jealous of them, happy for them? What is it? Or do they have other conflicts that they're having to deal with that maybe you didn't have to?
Well, you know, our goal of the series was to show what it's like to look at families who are trying to do it right.
Yeah.
You know, we know what it's like when they don't have the support. We all know how bad that is. So we chose families who have parents that are supportive or on their way there. Mm-hmm. And what I was shocked to learn was that even though they are out and even though they have something like Bridging Voices to go to, even those kids suffer with severe anxiety and depression.
Really?
Because of the large message that you get from society as a whole. One of our kids, his name is Riley. When we met, he was 16. He lives in the middle of nowhere, Washington, in a place called Battleground, of all places. Riley, you know, if you drive through Battleground, it's pretty, you'll see lots of guns and ammo stores and paintball and, train tracks going through the middle of town, that kind of place, which is actually, it's a really beautiful town. But I can't imagine being a trans kid there. And Riley, on top of it, is also, he loves his country so much, and his parents have a military background, and he's in the ROTC program. Yeah. So if you go watch the film, you'll get to meet a trans teenager who's holding the American flag on a football field on a high school in Missouri and find out, or on a high school in Washington, and you'll find out what it's like to be him.
Hmm. I wanted to ask about, I mean, because that was my question, by the way. Dang it.
You're welcome.
But the
doing
impact
your
that
job
it,
for you yet again.
The impact that it had on you and just watching today's youth and the amount of bullying that's still there, if and kind of like what your feelings are, because you're a mentor now, not just through your music, but you yourself.
Well, I saw my job as the guy who's supposed to hold the microphone up and hold the camera up and make sure it's in focus, because the message that these kids have is strong enough to carry all of their peers through all of this. I feel like all of the answers lie in their hearts, and that there are a lot of adults probably arguing about what the rights should be and what who should get to use what bathroom and who's allowed to do what. And if you just listen to these kids say who they are, what they're going through, and what they need, I feel like it would all be much clearer. So that's our goal. And I am continually inspired by them. By making a film together in a series, we all became family. And so we talk all the time, and we text an Instagram story. Now I know how to do Instagram stories, thanks to them. They are pretty much my only hope for the future. You know, I see them and the way that they are with each other. You know, we found kids from all over the different parts of the country, and they all got to meet in Los Angeles, and they formed an instant family. You know, in 5 minutes, they were like, all right, what are your pronouns? How do I talk to you? What do I call you? Okay, great. They ditched us. They all went to 7-Eleven together. And I was like, I don't ever remember having an easy time of connecting with kids when I was that age. So they are incredibly advanced in terms of creating a family network.
Do you see yourself doing more filmmaking like this? Or was this a one-time get this message out this
way? No, I love making films now. It's like, it's my new addiction. I'm sober and I'm in recovery, but I can totally get addicted to filmmaking. Yeah, I'm working on another film right now about a woman named Terry. She used to be a member of the WWE, and she now is a body worker, healer. So we're working on a film together right now. So you can't stop me now.
So how does it feel to sell out in No. I mean the show.
I love how you asked that.
Truly, I mean the show. Yeah, coming back to San Francisco, selling out on a Friday night. And again, if you are just catching the show now or listening, there's still space on Saturday. So if you plan to go see Matt Elber, you definitely got to grab your tickets right away.
Give the URL for Feinstein's. Is it?
You know what? The easiest way is you go to mattalbert.com/tour.
Very good.
And all the info is right there.
Yeah. But yeah, how does it feel to sell out in San Francisco?
I'm always shocked when anyone buys a ticket to any of my shows. I just always figure they're going to be empty. And then when I show up and there's people there, it makes me happy. So yeah, I'm overjoyed.
Do you think there'll be a lot of people there you knew from when you lived here?
I thought you were going to ask me if there were a lot of people that I had slept with. That is quite possible. I have no regrets. No, I already know that there are some wonderful friends. Sure. And actually, my dad's coming on Friday night. So wow. If you want to meet my dad, you come Friday and you give him a hug.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I was going to ask him, about your, being a mentor for youths, but also the singer for many of us in the LGBTQ community, we connect with and we're there, as part of your audience, as your fans, and we understand everything that you're singing. It's almost like you're singing for us, to us.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And we travel with you in that way, and you're a brother, you're a friend, you're a neighbor. That's what it feels like when listening to your songs. And so is it always super extra special when you have a huge crowd of LGBTQ fans who are singing along with you?
Oh, man, it's a dream job. I mean, I never had, when I was a kid, like I told you, I had Madonna, I had Elton John, I had Def Leppard, but, Elton John wasn't out yet. And I had to switch all the pronouns in all the songs to kind of make them relatable. And I just thought, well, what if you don't have to switch the pronouns? And that's why I started writing songs. So the fact that people come up to me and say things like, we fell in love to your music, or my partner passed away and your music got me through it. It's like, I don't know how to describe the feeling other than just grateful.
Do you hear from closeted musicians who ask you, how do you do it?
I have, yeah. I'm in touch with quite a few people, not even just musicians. There's a friend of mine who's a closeted gay guy who's married, and he has kids, and he's a youth pastor, and he's... we're sort of pen pals, and I've been kind of like encouraging him to, come out. And I think he's just about ready to, and which is pretty brave, it's weird. It's 2019, but in some ways it's still 1942, like we still have, depending on what your environment is or what your community is, it may, all of this time passing may not have made it any easier for you. And I think that's what I learned most about hanging out with these kids. It's like, life for gay adults or queer adults has gotten way better. If you're 13 or 14, however, your whole world is dictated by the adults around you. And we have to make it safer for them. If we're not making it safer every day, then we're failing them. Because the fact is, many of them don't make it. So I want all of them to make it. So
I was going to ask, not just, maybe somebody that's closeted in the industry, but somebody who comes to your show. And it might not be closeted, but might be newer, don't know that you're gay. I'm sure you get that.
Oh gosh. If you don't know I'm gay, you figure it out really quickly. I hang out after every show and I try to say hello to everyone, cause that's my favorite part, is just getting to shake hands and give hugs and hear where people are at. I hope that if you come to my show and you're in the closet, you'll decide to come out by the end of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have an audience, and definitely has a chance to ask you questions. I will continue being nosy. There's a couple more questions that I have for you.
Okay.
I mean, you're back home, so I might as well ask. And there's probably people who will tune in who know you, and they probably have nosy questions.
Oh,
but
gosh. They don't get to ask questions.
We'll give the audience a chance. If you have a question for Matt, we'll take him.
I just wanted to ask what precipitated your move to Portland.
Oh, well, as I've said before, I fell in love and moved with a fellow. we moved to Portland together, and we didn't end up staying together, but we both loved Portland. And while I wish I could live in San Francisco, I can't afford it. So I have a cute little house with a yard in Portland, and Southwest Airlines makes it really easy to pop down here a bunch. So that's why I moved to Portland.
Anyone else? I have a question. You've mentioned some of the other singers you used to want to be. Who are, and this is like one of those most basic questions you ask an artist, but still it's always, I love hearing the answers. Who do you like to listen to yourself? I mean, who are the people you're like, whether it's just because you really enjoy their music or even, God, I want to do what he's doing or she's doing.
Let's see. Some of my favorite artists right now are Amy Ray. She's half of the Indigo Girls. She has a new album out called Holler, which is a straight up bluegrass country album by an amazing lesbian. And she has an incredible band. So if go see Amy Ray's show. She's incredible. My friend Dan is her keyboard player. I love listening to Dua Lipa. She's a young pop artist, D-U-A-L-I-P-A. I do push-ups to her music every morning. She gets me going and happy. I'm doing a cover of one of her songs this weekend at the shows. So if you love Dua Lipa, come listen to her. She has one of the sexiest songs in the whole world called New Rules. And I also love listening to my brother. My brother's band is called Deep Dark Blue. And you can find him on the internet if you type in Deep Dark Blue. He composed and scored all the music to Room to Grow. It's just beautiful, dreamy electronic music with a lot of heart and soul humanness.
I'll keep going, yeah.
Yeah.
So back to those nosy questions. Here we go. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, moving to Portland. I hear a lot of love that you have for San Francisco, which many of us do who live here, and many of us are trying to claw our way into staying here now. Sure. And you, it sounds like even early on, just packed up and said, I'm okay with it because I get a cute little house up in Portland, and Southwest Airlines makes it easy for me to fly back and forth. But we kind of brought it up. There are new condos developments, and I ask this question a lot, and how that makes people feel, and leaving it behind, but also still loving the city.
Oh, yeah. I think this is one of those places where it's like, because I got to be myself and find out what that felt like here, there is a piece of me that just always feels like this is where I belong. I sing here every year, usually at least once or twice. And I put in days before this trip and after so I can stay extra. I love sitting at coffee shops in the Castro and literally running into friends that I met when I was 22. And there's something magic about this place where people stay. Definitely my heart has stayed here, even though, my musical journey has taken me. I had to go some other places. I had to go to LA and meet people there and make a music video. And I had to go to Portland to, go hole away in a little house so I could write songs in the basement. But I really appreciate you all keeping the city alive and making it such a special place. I mean, we're looking out the window at one of the most beautiful views I can imagine of the Bay Bridge,
And that's our number two bridge.
It's my number one bridge. Famous. I always loved the Bay Bridge.
From China. Our number two bridge from China.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you, China.
Yeah. You mentioned, you used to look out the window from your apartment in the Castro, and there was, a lot of stuff that was going on, and it's like, no, I got to focus.
Well, that's such a PG version of that story. I love it.
A lot of that, the activity and the action, it's decreased a lot. If you looked out that same window, you might see babies being pushed around in strollers, which is not bad.
Well, let's hope they're gay babies.
Let's hope they're gay babies. So I kind of would love to hear your perspective on that, if that at all makes you feel anything. I know, some folks think it's kind of sad because it's not the same Castro as it used to be, but at the same time, I mean, I think these are all, symbols of the fight, right? The progress that we were looking for to be included in society.
Well, my short answer is that I still feel all of the queer power and love here right when I hit the ground. And I feel like that's embraced by all of the amazing straight people who also love it and encourage it. And they create that space too. Without our allies, we would probably fold, in terms of being able to keep our neighborhood and keep our place. So even though the neighborhood may change and shift, I think there's a lot about it that I wanted to change when I lived here. I mean, there were some things I didn't love about the Castro, and those things I think are better. it might be hard if I still lived in the village and watching, you know, my favorite places turn over. But, you know, that's, I just look at it as like, that's life. Change is going to happen. And the real heart of any community is just the people living there. And as long as there is a respect for the history of, you know, gosh, I remember when the Supreme Court finally struck down the sodomy laws, for example, you know, and it was finally like nationwide gay sex was finally decriminalized, you know, and I'm jumping up and down at Castro Market and crying and screaming with my friends. And that's the same street that they held, you know, vigils for our fallen ones and, you know, the celebrations of the joys and challenges. You know, I think that just gets sewn into the city in a way that can never leave, no matter what happens to the storefronts.
I think San Francisco is a lot like Matt. And what I mean is talking about the woman who might come to your show and not knowing you were gay would learn it very quickly. Any straight person who moves to San Francisco, they learn pretty quickly that this is a very important part of the DNA here. So that's my analogy of the day.
We're just about to wind down, and going to play a song.
I talk too much. Sorry.
No, I talk too much.
Are we already at the end?
No, no. I mean, we have a couple more questions before you play for us. But I'd love to hear. I mean, did you already pick a song that you're going to play today?
Yes, I have one in mind. Let's see. So I wrote this. It's one of the first songs I wrote. I wrote it here in San Francisco, so I thought that'd be cool. When I was a kid, before I came out, and I still knew I had crushes on my schoolmates, you know, I had those butterflies in my stomach, and, you know, sitting next to, I remember my friend Neil when I was in sixth grade, I had a big crush on Neil. And I looked forward to this one specific day every year, because it was the one day we all took a field trip to go see the Nutcracker Suite. So we all got on buses and went downtown St. Louis to Powell Symphony Hall. And, you know, Pound Symphony Hall was expansive and covered in red velvet and crystal chandeliers. And because it was so big and it was downtown, you know, just like everybody, the instructions you get when you're on a field trip is that you have to have a field trip buddy. So you hold hands all day to make sure you don't get lost. And that was a very exciting day for me because I got to hold hands with Neil all day. So I wrote a song, you know, all these years later about that experience, and it's called Field Trip Buddy.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute. Yeah. Just, I mean, wow. Field Trip Buddy. You mentioned, you know, being out in the street and when these big laws, you know, they crumble and more equality gets passed, you know, in 2013 when we got federal marriage equality. I don't know where you were at, but here in San Francisco, it was so... Gosh, people were, you know, spilling out into the street. It was right around Pride. The courthouse was filled. I mean, it was just, I can't describe it, you know, in words. And so I wanted to ask about, you know, when we got federal marriage, that day, where were you? What were you feeling?
I think that day I was actually on tour somewhere, so I didn't get to be around all my tribe, but I remember just being on the phone all day with my friends, and I still remember that feeling, you know, of it was a huge day. It's funny because it's bittersweet for me, because I think, gosh, you know, I spent like a couple of years listening to what it's like to be a queer teenager, and, you know, we have so far to go for them. I don't feel like our job will be done until there's a gay straight alliance at every school, or a QSA, or whatever you want to call it, a place that you can go feel normal and be accepted. Until that exists in every school, I'm just going to keep pounding the pavement. Because honestly, I think I said it earlier, but we're just losing so many of them. Yeah, it's I don't want to bring the show down, but it's we're just losing them. And there's no reason in this day and age why we can't stand up and demand safer environments for all of our kids. Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned your tour. Where, for folks who aren't here and can't make it to Feinstein's, where are you going to be next?
Let's see. I'm getting ready to perform at a couple of gay weddings, which you're not invited to. maybe you are, who knows? But I'll be performing this summer in Provincetown at Bear Week in on the Cape Cod, and I'll be in New York City just before that at Joe's Pub. And before that, I'm just going to be home making films. So,
yeah.
Wow. Come see me on the East Coast.
Wait, so I brought up marriage equality, and then, you know, you're going to do a couple weddings, and you remember I said I was nosy? I just wanted to know, like, where's marriage at in your life and world? And
Let's see. Well, I'm currently single, but, you know, I'm totally open to it.
So prospective husbands should go to madalbert.com. Is there a form to fill out, upload a photo?
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be terrible? No, the prospective husbands should just come say hello.
Did you say you're playing at a Bear Weekend?
Oh, yeah. There's something called Bear Week that happens on Cape Cod every year. And they really should just call it Beard Week, because you don't have to be bear-sized to go. It's a place where, you know, about 10,000 handsome, beardy gay guys descend at the end of Cape Cod. And if you've never been to Provincetown, I highly recommend you taking a trip, because it is the San Francisco of the East Coast.
Well, I mean, maybe they won't go to mattalbert.com as prospective husbands, but maybe Bear Week. Where are you in the bear spectrum?
I'm making my way there quickly if I keep eating as much ice cream and pizza as I do. No, I definitely feel part of the whole bear community. They're lovely, roly-poly, huggy, cuddly guys, and I'm happy to be one of them.
Well, we're about to hear Matt perform Field Trip, but if you have a question, we will take your last opportunities to ask Matt your questions, because we'll end the show with this great song. Any questions? Oh, they're just dying to hear you sing.
Okay, well, yeah. Let me make sure this thing sounds like it's in tune here. Yeah, I love singing this song. This is the one that I wrote in that bedroom apartment overlooking Beck's Motor Lodge. Here's Field Trip, buddy. Fingers clenching the plastic handle of the lunchbox on the seat I saved for you, and kicking off the clumps of snow still clinging to my Velcros. I wonder if you remember you said you'd be my field trip buddy. Places we'll find all by ourselves, if you would be my field trip buddy. I promise I won't tell anybody else. Oh, the places we'll find all by ourselves, if you would be my field trip buddy. I promise I won't tell anybody else. You know they always want you to please stay together and hold hands. Our instructions before entering the symphony hall. It's not the chandelier circus that's making me nervous. Your hands playing orchestras against mine. Oh, the places we'll find all by ourselves. If you would be my field trip buddy, I promise I won't tell anybody else. Oh, no, 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 no. The places we'll find all by ourselves. If you would be my field trip buddy, I promise I won't tell anybody else. Oh, lights are going down now, and everyone's secretly hoping they never come back on. Balancing elbows, you keep pressing so slowly.
I can't be making this up. And the sugar plums turn to cotton candy in my periphery. Our foreheads so close, and right there in the back row, foreseeing a standing ovation. We promised to be each other's field trip buddies. Oh, places we'll find all by ourselves. If you would be my field trip buddy, I promise I won't tell anybody else. Oh, places we'll find all by ourselves. If you would be my field trip buddy, I promise I won't tell anybody else. I won't tell nobody else. Now here you go again, you say. You need your freedom. Well, who am I to keep you down?
Supposed to do for an encore.
You're too kind. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm a huge fan of yours, by the way. Thank you for telling our stories and keeping these lines open, and for having me here today.
You're going to make me cry. You were already going to make me cry with the Field Trip Buddy song, just because it brought me back to, like, you know, 5, 6 years old, 7, 8. But at that time, I was just so afraid. Yeah. To think about any of the girls that I wanted to hold hands with. And so I just kind of fantasize about, John already knows.
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No, Susan Lucci. Because it was the only thing I could watch after school.
So this Neil, was that the boy's name?
Oh, he was one of many, yes. Yeah, but I had crushes on many boys.
Has he ever heard this song?
You know, I don't know. I should look him up on Facebook.
That would be kind of funny and creepy at the same time.
Hi, I wrote a song about you. So creepy.
If you like it, go to mattelber.com, fill out the form, submit your photo.
Besides, you know, playing for an awesome crowd, a sold-out show here in San Francisco, any great big plans while you're...
Oh, well, since you guys ordered up all this sunshine, I think I'm going to take a long stroll around the Embarcadero. I might just try to go. There's a cool pier right out there that I like to go out. I see some people out there. I might go take a selfie and play a song to the Bay Bridge.
Yeah. I want to tell you something. You know, today I'm just super off. This week was rough for me personally.
Oh,
and
no.
Feeling like, you know, just a lot of things that you were talking about. Your music really helped me through it. The emotions and yes, LGBTQ, it's much easier now, even as an LGBTQ adult, but there's still some underlying things that come up every now and then, and you touch on it with the film or the series that you created in some of your songs and just talking, and that are these feelings of, you know, depression, or sometimes feeling like you just got to keep going with who you are, and who you are is just incredibly amazing. And so you being here has really centered me and brought me back to that. And as we end the program, we had just experienced you right here at the Commonwealth Club perform for us. If you wouldn't mind leaving us, you know, just some words of encouragement for everyone else out there, even myself, who got the awesome opportunity to sit next to you and feel you pretty much saved my life this week.
Oh, wow. Well, it is my great honor. I think we save each other's lives all the time. I'm learning a lot in my old age that reaching out to each other and just being honest with what's going on in your life It doesn't have to be a 4-hour phone call. It could just be like a, you know, just, you know, you have to make a choice, I think, every time. Do I put a face on or do I just show my real self? And as messy and ugly and as that can be. And I think I'm learning that every time you choose just to be really present and just say, yep, this is me, you know, warts and all. This is exactly what's going on. I'm totally freaked out about the world right now. Somehow you feel instantly better just by being honest with somebody else. So that's what I'm trying to practice in my life all the time now.
Matt Elber, everyone. So we're very sorry, but Friday night's show is sold out. You can still get your tickets. Do it right now because it's just Saturday night.
Yeah.
There are a few seats left. So easiest thing to do is go to mattelbert.com and get your tickets. We can't wait for the next time you come back to San Francisco and then sell out all again and hear you perform again.
Well, next time we have to do a duet. How about that?
Oh my gosh, that's fun. I'll be on the other side. I can play the tambourine. And I like to karaoke. My wife is laughing at me because I was teaching her how to sing Shallow.
Wait, your wife is a singer too, right?
She's a singer, yeah. It's just English. You know, she's just learning English. And so she laughs at me because I was like, you gotta have the facial expressions. So I have to admit, your facial expressions were everything that I was trying to teach her. So she's probably back there like...
Oh, thank God this is only audio.
for those who are just tuning, yeah, you're listening. I was trying to do facial expressions. You could go to Facebook at Michelle Meow, and you'll see the live. That's what I was trying to do. Is move the muscles in your face, and you could say certain words better. But Matt, they were just the best. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us here at the Commonwealth Club. Every Thursday, we're here to tape the Michelle Meow Show, which airs on Progressive Voices, and then we put the podcast up at Commonwealth Club. Great big names coming up, so check the schedule at Commonwealth Club/MMS. Next week, we're doing two programs. We have James Lapine, who's the original, yes, the creator of falsettos on Broadway. So that's super huge. I'm nervous about that. Same nervousness, you know, meeting Matt Elber.
Oh, no. Be way more nervous than I am.
And then Thursday, the cast of The Great Leap, which is playing now at the ACT Theater, and that includes BD Wong, Ari Gross, and Tim Liu.
Yeah.
They'll be here with us. So thanks again for being here with us. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us for the Michelle Meow Show, your A through Z covering the LGBT, LM, NOP, and everyone in between. We're here every Thursday live at the Commonwealth Club, and you can listen to past shows at
commonwealthclub.org/MMS.